This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie.
We have a super special episode for you all today. Why is it so special, Katie? Tell us.
Because it's our 1 year anniversary of revamping, renewing, redoing the podcast.
It's our 1 year anniversary of the start of season two.
We thought we'd do something a little bit differently. So today we're covering one topic, but each of us has a different section of an incredibly amazing person's life.
Yes, a pretty cool and honestly complex historical figure, one of my favorite scientists, and someone who, if you've been with us since the very beginning, someone who we have done an episode on before, but to be honest, we wanted to give you better sound quality and better facts.
He deserved a better episode than what we were just little babies in the world of podcasting. We know so much more now, so we're tackling it again.
We're going to be talking about Nikola Tesla for this 1 year anniversary.
Ooh, even Goose is excited.
Goosey girl. She's like, tell me, tell me.
She pumped.
She pumped. The way that we're going to do this today is I am going to be talking to you all about his life from his early years through his death. And then Katie will take over to talk about some fun government related things.
I've got some stories about what happened immediately after his death, some conspiracy theories. One of my favorite sort of conspiracy theories meets lore almost, and just, you know, some fun things related to the end of Nikola Tesla's life. I'm pumped.
And I'm pumped for that part, like really excited for that, because we didn't really have that in the last episode we did about him.
No, I intended on making it its own episode, and then that just didn't happen until right now.
Before we get into that, do you have any life updates?
No.
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all. I was going to say, Gabe drew a little smiley face and put it on my vape.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
That's about it. I'm halfway through a quart of Thorns and Roses. Slide into my DMs if you've read the book.
Oh, I just saw a picture about that book. Been thinking about listening to it.
It's spicy.
Mm, okay. Yeah, I'm in. I'm in. I'm here for the spicy books.
Yeah, that's right, it. What about you?
To be honest, not much. This morning started with panicking because my dog's heart medicine was out of stock on Chewy, but the cardiologist figured it out, so I can go get those at Walgreens later. Walgreens.
The one plural, later. Just the one that exists.
The one Walgreens. And because of that panic, I went out and I got myself some Tim Hortons coffee this morning to make my day a little bit better.
Excellent. I love that. I guess just before we move on, I just want to thank the listeners.
Yes.
Cha-ching. This has been just a crazy year for the podcast. A lot of growth personally and podcastally. And none of that would have been possible without any of you guys and our incredible Patreons. So thank you so much for your time. This has been really cool.
This has been an incredible journey for the both of us.
Yeah.
When we started this podcast 3 years ago, I don't think that either of us imagined that we'd actually be having such a big platform and honestly, like, having a way to have a little bit of an income from this. It's not much. It's just a start. But we're really, really appreciative of the fact that you all enjoy sitting here and listening to us every week. We like to bring you the facts, but we also like to ramble, and I'm so glad that most of you don't hate us for that.
Right.
Some people have been upset about my laugh, but that's fine.
I'm also
fueled. Far and few between.
I'm fueled by hate, so I'm here for it. But just, you know, thank you all so much for everything. This has been a cool year, and I'm excited to see what the next year brings. Next time we get together, we need to, like, celebrate with a cake or something.
Yes! Oh,
because I wanted to do that when we hit 100,000 downloads.
Yeah.
And we didn't.
We didn't. Whoops.
Oopsies.
Oopsies. But that's okay. We can celebrate together. We'll be with each other soon anyway.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. My birthday's in a month. So.
Yes.
Yeah, guys, my birthday's in a month. That's my personal update. Anyway, let's move on to our super special episode because it's a long one.
Before we get into the meat of our episode today, we want to talk to you guys about a podcast. Millennial is a weekly roundtable about the Generation Y, our generation, experience.
Wait, we're a Generation Y? We're not just millennials?
We're not just millennials, we're Generation Y. Things we're learning.
Wow.
Which goes right along with their podcast. From news to politics to pop culture, their panel digs into why these stories matter and how they affect millennials.
The thing is, millennials are always getting attacked in the media by older generations, and they're here to clap back.
If you've ever wondered how to maneuver student loan, voting, relationships, careers, all of these things, or just life in general, we feel that so hard. And so does Millennial Podcast.
Are you exhausted by the current political landscape? So are we at Millennial Podcast. Join them for some cathartic venting and conversations outside of politics that matter.
They interview millennials with cool jobs that they want to learn more about, and I'm here for that.
And they're also ready to call companies, politicians, and even each other out on their bullshit. Sometimes a literal phone call is in order.
We stand by that statement.
Clap, clap, clap.
As also millennials. Write into the Millennial Confessional to share your story anonymously, because everyone has secrets, and sometimes we've got to get them off our chest.
Their social media manager is also a Gen Zer and regularly roasts them for their choogy millennial tendencies. Oof, I feel called out myself.
Mm-hmm. They're here to share their stories and yours. Put simply, Millennial is about journeying through young adulthood together.
Listen to Millennial today wherever you listen to podcasts or at millennialshow.com. Again, check Millennial out on your favorite podcasting app or at millennialshow.com. Okay, for all my neurodivergent people out there who do see any video clips of this, if I'm not making eye contact, it's because I'm coloring. I digest Ashley's beautiful research best when I'm doing something else. So I'm listening, I promise.
I get it.
I know Ashley does, but now that we have a video thing going, I feel the need to make a disclaimer to anyone who might be watching this.
I'm glad you put it in there. All right, let's get into this. So before I say my first sentence, I want everyone to know that I used like 20 fucking resources for this. So I tried to find the commonalities between all of them. And when I was looking up Nikola Tesla's birth date, there was a bit of a discrepancy between two dates.
Okay, wow, but just right off the bat.
It's literally right next to each other though. Nikola Tesla was born either July 9th or 10th, 1856, to Serbian parents in Smiljan in the former Austrian Empire, a mountainous area of the Balkan Peninsula in what is now modern-day Croatia.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. He was one of five children. His father, Milutin, was a Serbian Orthodox priest, and his father hoped that Nikola would follow in his footsteps. And his mother, Georgina, aka Juka, though unschooled, was highly intelligent and would invent instruments to make caring for the family's farm more manageable.
So cool.
Right? What a dope-ass woman.
That's so fucking
one of
cool.
The one of the inventions was a mechanical egg beater. I love that so much. It's said that Nikola's love of inventing and his creativity comes from his mother and watching her tinker. A quote from Tesla himself, "My mother was an inventor of the first order and would, I believe, have achieved great things had she not been so remote from modern life and its multifold opportunities. She invented and constructed all kinds of tools and devices and wove the finest designs from thread which was spun by her." End quote.
Holy shit, she's amazing.
Right? And like the fact that he speaks so highly of her, like,
yeah,
that's, he really loved his mama.
I love that his dad was like super into religion and he's like, nope, fuck that, following my mama, and like got into tinkering and science.
I love that so much. But I also appreciate the fact that those two kinds of people could be in a relationship with one another.
They're
have
pretty
five kids.
Yeah.
As a boy, He demonstrated a high intelligence. He had a photographic memory and would memorize entire books and logarithmic tables. According to PBS, he was able to perform integral calculus in his mind. Languages came easily to him. Yeah, let's go back to that for a second. In his mind, bro, that's insane. I can't even do simple math in my mind.
Good for him.
Good for him.
Cell phones ruined me. I used to be something.
Languages came easily to him. He became fluent in 6. And he also had quite a poetic and imaginative touch to everything he did. Mm. 6 languages.
That's insane.
Listen, I love the English language. Have I mastered that yet? No.
No, that's what I can barely spell. Restaurant? Are you fucking kidding me? I spell that word wrong so many times that now my phone auto-corrects it incorrectly to how I spell it. That's how many times I misspell it. They're like, oh, this must be a name of a restaurant. Like, it must be ironic. Like, damn, good on you, Tesla.
Good on
you. Fucking genius.
He spent a lot of time as a child creating inventions. According to TeslaScienceCenter.org, quote, his keen interest in nature and the way things work, combined with intelligence and curiosity, led to childhood inventions such as a motor powered by June bugs.
What? Oh my god, the childhood whimsy. Fucking kidding me. This is exactly why I didn't read the notes fully like this. Yes. You sent me, because I was like, I know I need
even while doing the notes myself, I don't think I took in that sentence enough. That just surprised me.
It's the craziest shit I've ever heard.
Amazing. I love
fucking it. Love it.
More of the inventions. Air piston gun and frog catching device.
Oh my god, what like a magical little boy.
In elementary school, he built water turbines and dreamed of using Niagara Falls to generate power. A dream that he saw come to life in 1896, and I will get to that. End quote.
I was about to say, the one thing I do know about Tesla is that does happen, but I didn't know that was like his first of all nerdiest childhood dream. I love little child Tesla.
Yes.
Can somebody please write a comic book series about Tesla as
a
child? Yeah. Wouldn't that be so fucking
I don't have
cute?
Much money, but I would give money to that cause.
Take
all my money.
I love him. Okay. He's so cute. I don't even like kids.
Same. According to the Franklin Institute, quote, he described his adventurous imaginings to be much more than dreams. Instead, they were highly detailed visualizations with a dash of intuition added, end quote. Speaking of his dream about Niagara Falls, according to PBS, young Nico saw a steel engraving of Niagara Falls. In his imagination, there appeared a huge water wheel being turned by the powerful cataract. He said to an uncle that he would go to America one day and capture energy in this way. And 30 years later, he did exactly that. End quote.
Damn.
I love that for him. Actualizing your childhood dreams is pretty incredible, because I don't think that happens for enough of us.
Yeah, seriously.
Because life is hard. But you're gonna find out that life was also hard for Nikola too. During his childhood, Nikola was often physically ill, and he also had growing mental health issues. I mean, who doesn't? Don't we all?
I was gonna say samesies.
Mm-hmm. Which the mental health issues were said to have started after his brother was killed.
Oh shit.
Mm-hmm. A quote from history.com, quote, in 1863, Tesla's brother, Dane, was killed in a riding accident. The shock of the loss unsettled the 7-year-old Tesla, who reported seeing visions, the first signs of his lifelong mental illnesses. End quote.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah. Isn't that terrible? I feel so bad for him. From 1870 to 1873, Nikola attended the Reykjavik Senior Secondary Technical School, a highly regarded institution where students were prepared for advanced technical studies. While studying there, he discovered that his passions lay in the science of electricity, and he told his father that that was the life he wanted, much to his father's dismay.
What was, like, electricity like at the time, generally?
Okay, like, this... This was the time when, like, Thomas Edison was also, like, fucking with the light bulb. Okay?
Okay. 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 So people, like, know about electricity.
It's, like, just kind of starting to be harnessed in more industrial means.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do people have electricity in their homes yet? I'm asking for people who, like me, don't
know. Who don't know. So later in the episode, we're gonna talk about some of the work that Tesla does when he's in his early 20s. And I think that it'll make more sense to the timing that we're in.
Okay, okay, okay. Cool, 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 cool.
Yes. Also remember that, like, as a child, he grew up in a very rural, mountainous area. If there was any electricity, probably not much. But it's I probably doubt,
mostly, like, rich people in general that had it. I just don't know.
Yeah, and, like, I'm just seeing candles being the source of lighting.
Okay, so we're still in that. We're farm. Still in that. Okay.
And especially in the region that he's in. Yeah,
that makes sense.
But, well, I think it'll make more sense as we get further into the episode.
Okay. Okay.
It was during this time, at 17 years old, that Nikola suffered from cholera, and his father gave him permission to follow a life of science instead of a life of priesthood if Nikola could overcome the illness.
Oh.
Thus began a life bigger than what he could have imagined. In 1875, he began studying electrical engineering at the Joanneum Polytechnic Institute in Graz, Austria, and of course with his obsessive abilities, he excelled in school. At one point, he was able to witness the Gramme machine, G-R-A-M-M-E, which generated direct current electricity using electromagnets and could also be reversed to operate as an electricity-driven motor. Seeing this planted ideas into Nikola's head about bypassing the inefficiency of direct current and how alternating current could be used. His professors laughed at the thought, and that lack of support pushed Tesla to spend years obsessively working on alternating current. The standard for electricity at the time was DC, direct current, but Tesla was determined to use alternating current as a form of electricity and power.
There's truly nothing like an I'll show you type of attitude, you know?
Yeah.
That just always leads to just such great places.
Right? You're gonna tell me I can't fucking do this? Watch me.
Yeah.
Watch me. That was the attitude.
Fuck around and find out.
Tesla then moved and studied at the University of Prague, and then after a year with a lack of funds, left school to work with the newly established Hungarian Telegraph Office in Budapest. He did incredible work and was quickly recognized for it and was made the manager of the telephone company in 1881 and made a mountain of discoveries in his time there.
Oh,
his
yeah.
first of which was a device he invented for voice amplification on telephones.
Whoa,
isn't that crazy? He's like, I'm just working, I'm being the manager, but I'm also gonna invent a ton of really cool shit while I'm here. Thanks.
Just tinkering, figuring shit out, it's fine, just being like my mom. Mm-hmm.
He still spent ample time focused on his fixation with alternating current and slipped into a mental and physical breakdown with mysterious, at that time, symptoms. According to the Franklin Institute, he suffered from, quote, a hypersensitivity to sounds, light, and vibration. He had shivers, twitches, and wildly erratic pulse rates. The illness continued for some months and defied medical diagnosis. Physical improvement came, the extreme sensitivity subsided, and Tesla returned to work, still maintaining his captivation with the AC motor puzzle. End quote. I'm like, what does that sound like to you?
Burnout. and or depression.
Yeah, depression, anxiety, burnout, all of it mixed together. It's he was doing a lot. He was doing so much. And I can't even imagine, like, with how brilliant his mind is, how much of the time of his life that it was just working in overdrive with really no break. Because that's just how his brain functioned. And I'm sure it was draining a lot.
Oh, absolutely. It's like it's that movie Limitless, where he's using his brain too much.
Oh my God, yeah.
That's just Tesla crazy movie. All the time.
All the time, naturally.
Yeah.
The missing piece of the puzzle would come to him in 1882 while he was taking a walk with a friend, Anton Zagetti, in the Budapest City Park. Quote, "While walking with a friend at sunset, reciting poetry by Goethe, a spasm of revelation struck Tesla. He stood transfixed, explaining how an AC motor would work. The vision he outlined in minute detail had surfaced spontaneously in response to the questions he had asked himself back in 1875. Tesla later described his visualization powers with the example that he would envisage a design in meticulous detail, then return to the retained image days or weeks later and be able to examine it for wear as if it had been running during the intervening period." End quote.
Whoa.
That's all happening in his mind's eye. That's crazy.
Damn.
And about that moment, in his own words, quote, "One afternoon, which is ever present in my recollection, I was enjoying a walk with my friend in the city park and reciting poetry. At the age, I knew entire books by heart, word for word. One of these was Goethe's Faust. The sun was just setting and reminded me of a glorious passage. The glow retreats. Done is the day of toil. It yonder hastes. New fields of life exploring. Ah, that no wing can lift me from the soil, upon its track to follow, follow soaring." As I uttered these inspiring words, the idea came like a flash of lightning, and in an instant, the truth was revealed. I drew with a stick on the sand the diagram shown 6 years later in my address before the American Institute of Electrical Engineers. End quote. It just came to him while he was reciting poetry, and then he drew it in the dirt in the park. What?
If someone said that to me now about themselves, I'd punch them in the face. But knowing that the time period in which it happened, I'd be like, yeah, okay, Nikola Tesla, you're a baller.
Yeah, what a fucking badass. I'm just like so impressed and honestly astounded by how his brain functions. And the fact, like when I close my eyes and I imagine something, I do see pictures, because I know that we all see different things, or some people don't see really anything, but to be doing it in like meticulous detail is so impressive, and like a level that I can't even imagine. It was during this time that the telephone company was sold and Tesla moved to Paris to find work. And he made his move in April of 1882. Once in Paris, he was referred to a junior engineer position at the Continental Edison Company, the Paris branch of the American company that was expanding Thomas Edison's DC generators and lighting systems throughout the city.
Interesting. Going to go work with DC generators.
That was the only source of power at the time.
That's true.
Yeah. So he quickly advanced through the ranks of the company and became a traveling repairman sent to work on installations throughout Europe. He continuously spoke of his ideas about alternating current with really anyone who he thought would listen, but he received very little attention from coworkers who were working to expand the DC system. Then there was an incident. Quote, "The German city of Strasbourg did purchase an Edison system, but the dedication ceremony for the railroad station lighting was disastrous. The switch caused an immediate explosion, which blew out a wall of the train shed. The German-speaking Tesla was dispatched to deal with the problem. He spent a year doing the repairs and waiting for various levels of bureaucracy to approve the work."
That's more than than just, that's a disaster. Holy shit.
That's a disaster. During the slow time of waiting, Tesla was able to convert his dreams to reality. In a rented machine shop, he built the solid version of the dynamo he had preserved in his mind's eye during the previous year. The model worked beautifully. On returning to Paris, Tesla's plan was to collect his Strasbourg bonus for startup funds and find French financial backers as he built his new AC generators and motors, end quote. From the Tesla Society, quote, in February 1882, Tesla discovered the rotating magnetic field, a fundamental principle in physics and the basis of nearly all devices that use alternating current. Tesla brilliantly adapted the principle of rotating magnetic field for the construction of alternating current induction motor and the polyphase system for the generation, transmission, distribution, and use of electrical power, end quote. He's doing all these absolutely incredible things, but unfortunately, it is rumored that the bonus never came. Whether it was a lack of funds on Edison's part or misplaced expectations on Tesla's part, the money never came to be. This is when Nikola made his move to America. He arrived in New York on June 6th, 1884. From the Nikola Tesla Museum, which we are absolutely going to.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, Tesla realized that in Europe, there was no understanding or support of his revolutionary discovery. So he accepted the offer of Charles Batchelor, a close associate of Edison, and his representative in Europe, to work in the main Edison factory in New York. In June, he went to Edison with a note in which Batchelor had written, quote, I know two great men. You are one of them. The other is this young man, end quote.
Wow.
I love that. Also, just thinking about, for anyone who knows a little bit about Tesla and Edison and their feud, I just feel like that would have been a hit to Edison's ego, and I kind of love it.
Yeah. Abso-fucking-lutely.
Tesla described this meeting with Thomas Edison as a, quote, memorable event in my life, end quote. He began to work for Edison again and made many improvements to efficiency and controls at the company. From Smithsonian Magazine, quote, according to Tesla, Edison offered him $50,000 if he could improve upon the DC generation plants Edison favored. Within a few months, Tesla informed the American inventor that he had indeed improved upon Edison's motors. Edison refused to pay up.
What?
Quote, when you become a full-fledged American, you will appreciate an American joke, Edison told him.
Wow.
Holy right?
shit.
Isn't that so fucked up? Like, bro, if you don't have the money, just say that. But, like, that's not a joke.
Damn.
You bet someone, like, oh, if you could do this, I'll pay you 50. Pay up,
motherfucker. Wow, what a douchebag. Okay.
Right? And this is why I'm like, I hope that note from Batchelor
hit
his ego. I hope it hurt. From Tesla Society, quote, Tesla set about improving Edison's line of dynamos while working in Edison's lab in New Jersey. It was here that his divergence of opinion with Edison over direct current versus alternating current began. This disagreement climaxed in the War of the Currents as Edison fought a losing battle to protect his investment in direct current equipment and facilities.
Damn. That's just a pride
Tesla
at that
pointed-
point. Like, bro, yes. It sucks. His is obviously better. Just get over it.
Just get over it and maybe get with the program.
Yeah.
Tesla pointed out the inefficiency of Edison's direct current electrical powerhouses that have been built up and down the Atlantic seaboard. The secret, he felt, lay in the use of alternating current, because to him, all energies were cyclical. Why not build generators that would send electrical energy along distribution lines first one way, then another, in multiple waves using the polyphase principle? Edison's lamps were weak and inefficient when supplied by direct current. Burn. This system had a severe disadvantage in that it could not be transported more than 2 miles due to its inability to step up to high voltage levels necessary for long distance transmission.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Consequently, a direct current power station was required at every 2 mile interval.
Imagine having to have that right now.
Every 2 miles.
Oh, fuck. Damn.
That's a lot.
That's bad.
To go like up and down the eastern seaboard, like that's.
Imagine having to have that right now. That is bad. In every direction, every 2 miles.
Ah! Direct current flows continuously in one direction. Alternating current changes direction 50 or 60 times per second and can be stepped up to very high voltage levels, minimizing power loss across great distances. The future belongs to alternating current. Nikola Tesla developed a polyphase alternating current system of generators, motors, and transformers, and held 40 basic U.S. patents on the system, which George Westinghouse bought, determined to supply America with the Tesla system. Edison did not want to lose his DC empire, and a bitter war ensued. This was the war of the currents between AC and DC, which...
Damn.
It just makes me think of the band.
America.
I just love that so much.
That's amazing. Wow.
Right? Tesla/Westinghouse ultimately emerged the victor because AC was a superior technology. It was a war won for the progress of both America and the world. End quote.
Damn.
Yeah. I imagine if this didn't happen, our technology, wow, it went, without Tesla, we'd still be so far behind, like, technologically.
It's funny that you say that. That is a bulk of what I'm going to be talking about.
I can't wait to hear you talk about that.
Of how technology rapidly improved almost immediately after Tesla's death.
Mm-hmm. And he wanted it to be free, man. Ugh. Tesla ended up walking away from Con Edison during this time. There was speculation that more unpaid bonuses were involved, but I think the more logical reason would be the electricity war between Tesla and Edison.
Well, I think it's more clearly the far superior product that Tesla had.
By this time in his life, his engineering reputation was well known, and he found financial backing for his projects related to AC motors and generators. In January of 1885, he founded the Tesla Electric Light and Manufacturing Company in New York. In his lab, he built his first polyphase induction motor and generator from the Franklin Institute. Quote, the Tesla Light and Manufacturing Company was established and began to produce AC-driven arc lighting following completion of the project that illuminated the city of Rahway, New Jersey. Tesla expected to go on to manufacture his generators, but his naivety brought failure. In the fall of 1886, the backers disagreed with Tesla, tricked him out of his money and patents, and left him penniless, end quote.
Damn, fuck people, man. Shit.
Fuck rich people, man.
The worst.
The worst kind of human. In 1888, quote, the basic patents for the polyphase system, electric magnetic motor, number 381.968, electrical transmission of power, number 382.280, system of electrical distribution, number 381.970, Mm-hmm. And another 4 patents were granted to him on May 1st. From 1888 to 1891, he secured a total of 36 patents, which allowed him to completely develop what was known as the Tesla polyphase system and created the basis for the second industrial revolution. And that's from the Nikola Tesla Museum, right? That's what we're saying. Like, all of these technological advances would not be possible without him.
No.
And his incredible mind. From the Franklin Institute, quote, "The engineering fraternity noticed Tesla and he was persuaded to address the American Institute of Electrical Engineers on May 16, 1888. Tesla's description of the theory and realization of his inventions was greeted as a masterwork. His genius was recognized." End quote.
Finally.
The paper he wrote to introduce his ideas to the American Institute was called "A New System of Alternating Current Motors and Transformers." One of the people who were most impressed by this was industrialist and inventor George Westinghouse. He visited Tesla's lab and was amazed at his work. From the Tesla Society, quote, "Tesla had constructed a model polyphase system consisting of an alternating current dynamo, step-up and step-down transformers, and AC motor at the other end. The perfect partnership between Tesla and Westinghouse for the nationwide use of electricity in America had begun," end quote. In 1891, at the age of 35, Tesla became a U.S. citizen. This was the same year that he invented the Tesla coil. Tesla coils are a type of electrical circuit used to generate low-current, high-voltage electricity. Today, they're widely used in radios, televisions, and other electronics, and can be used for wireless transmission. A coil at Tesla's experimental station in Colorado Springs, Colorado, created 30-foot sparks that could be seen from 10 miles away.
Holy shit.
Bro, in that time, had I seen that and I, like, didn't understand any of this, I would have been like, what is this magic?
That's how God was invented. People saw that and were like, oh, shit. Religion is, it's real. It's fucking real.
Oh, my God. This invention paved the way for all of the advances in wireless technology that we have today. Tesla also used the coil to study fluorescence, X-rays, radio, wireless power, and electromagnetism in the Earth and its atmosphere. And that's from biography.com.
Oh.
His work with electricity reflected just one facet of his fertile mind. Kind of
fertile love mind. That.
Fertile mind. Tesla also discovered that these coils, soon to be called the Tesla coils, made it possible to send and receive radio signals. He quickly filed for American patents in 1897, beating the Italian inventor Guglielmo Marconi to the punch. And that's from Smithsonian. We are going to circle back to Marconi.
Okay.
Very soon.
Okay.
According to the Nikola Tesla Museum, quote, "On February 3rd, 1892, at the Royal Society in London, Tesla gave a lecture entitled Experiments with Alternate Current of High Potential and High Frequency. Present were the most significant scientific figures of that time, including William Crookes, James Dewar, J.J. Thomson, many others. He would repeat this lecture in Paris on February 19th before members of the Société Française de Physique and the International Association of Electrical Engineers. Learning that his mother was close to death, he arrived in Gospic on April 15th, just in time to say goodbye to the person he loved most of all." End Aww. Quote.
Mm, yeah, I know.
That's sad. I hate that she died. At the invitation of a delegation from the Belgrade municipality and the Association of Engineers who had visited him in Budapest, Tesla traveled to Belgrade on June 2nd, 1892, where he stayed at the Hotel Imperial and visited Kalemegdan and the National Museum, as well as giving a lecture at the university on his latest research and discoveries. King Alexander Obrenovic received him with the highest honors. By decree of the royal regents in the name of the king, Tesla was decorated with the Order of St. Sava, second rank. This was the first time he was awarded for his scientific work.
Wow. Took that long for him to get an award.
It took him, right? It's not fair.
No, it's bullshit.
Bullshit. From MIT, quote, in 1893, Tesla achieved a milestone at the World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago. This exposition was the turning point for public acceptance of alternating current as it dispelled the public's doubts about the safety and reliability of alternating current. The exposition demonstrated that alternating current could run smoothly, and it later became the main standard for power systems. End quote. After the War of the Currents had concluded, Westinghouse and Con Edison had spent an ample amount of money in litigation with one another. From the Smithsonian, quote, fearing ruin, Westinghouse begged Tesla for relief from the royalties Westinghouse agreed to. Quote, your decision determines the fate of the Westinghouse Company, he said. Tesla, grateful to the man who had never tried to swindle him, tore up the royalty contract, walking away from millions in royalties that he was already owed and billions that would have accrued in the future. He would have been one of the wealthiest men in the world, a titan of the Gilded Age. End quote.
Wow.
He was like, I don't want you to go out of business because I want to make sure that people have access to this kind of energy. Yes, I will give away my millions, my possible billions.
Wow.
When people talk about him wanting free electrical access to everyone, they were not kidding. Like, he himself did not want it to be monetized necessarily because he wanted everyone to have access to it. And I just, God, I think even that, giving up that money in royalties proves it even more.
Absolutely.
What other proof could there be?
In 1895, Tesla was among the first to use AC hydroelectric power plants in the United States at Niagara Falls. The following year, the power plant was used to power the city of Buffalo, New York. This was highly publicized and helped in the global push to make AC electricity the standard power system. Also in 1895, unfortunately, Tesla's lab in New York burned down, destroying much of his work, including notes, inventions, and patents. This tragedy really hit him hard, and that's when he moved to Colorado Springs. Tesla continued to work on his ideas for wireless transmissions. He then met with wealthy financier J.P. Morgan to discuss these ideas. Morgan fronted him $150,000 to build a giant transmission tower. Tesla then hired architect Stanford White, who was immediately swayed because of Westinghouse's success with AC current and electricity due to Tesla. Of the project, Tesla said, quote, as soon as completed, it will be possible for a businessman in New York to dictate instructions and have them instantly appear in type at his office in London or elsewhere, end quote. Tesla said at the time, he will be able to call up from his desk and talk to any telephone subscriber on the globe without any change whatsoever in the existing equipment. An inexpensive instrument, not bigger than a watch, will enable its bearer to hear anywhere, on sea or land, music or song, the speech of a political leader, the address of an eminent man of science, or the sermon of an eloquent clergyman, delivered in some other place, however distant. In the same manner, any picture, character, drawing, or print can be transferred from one to another place. Millions of such instruments can be operated from but one plant of this kind. End quote.
He predicted cell phones and Apple Watches.
Oh my. Bro, the way I wish I could, like, take a dive into his brain and just, like, witness it all happening for myself.
Wow. No, it would be sheer madness. be terrifying.
It would be.
I don't think we could handle Tesla's brain. Mm. He's on a whole other level than we are.
It's on another plane of existence, bro.
Absolutely.
According to Britannica, quote, in 1898, Tesla announced his invention of a teleautomatic boat guided by remote control. When skepticism was voiced, Tesla proved his claims for it before a crowd in Madison Square Garden, end quote. Of course.
Baller move. Fucking baller move.
What a badass.
Love
it's
that.
It's like putting on a magic show.
I love that.
Just because you guys don't understand how it works does not mean that it's not real.
Yeah, just because I'm smarter than you doesn't mean that it's not. What a fucking genius.
So work began on the Wardenclyffe Tower in 1901. Now, this is the tower that J.P. Morgan gave him the $150,000 for.
Okay.
And it was quickly apparent that he was going to run out of funding before the project could be completed. He appealed to Morgan for more funding, but it was a fruitless request. Meanwhile, other investors were throwing their money into Marconi's project, which ended up sending a signal from England to Newfoundland, which, if people don't know, that's like the Canada area, in December 1901, from Smithsonian. Quote, Tesla grumbled that the Italian was using 17 of his patents, but litigation eventually favored Marconi and the commercial damage was done. The U.S. Wow. Supreme Court ultimately upheld Tesla's claims, clarifying Tesla's role in the invention of the radio, but not until 1943 after he died.
Damn.
Thus, the Italian inventor was credited as the inventor of the radio and became rich. Wardenclyffe Tower became a 186-foot-tall relic. And the defeat, Tesla's worst, led to another of his breakdowns.
Oh, no.
Quote, "It is not a dream," Tesla said. "It is a simple feat of scientific electrical engineering, only expensive, blind, faint-hearted, doubting world," end quote. The staff at Wardenclyffe were laid off in 1906, and by 1915, the site had fallen into disrepair. 2 years later, Tesla filed for bankruptcy, and the tower was dismantled and sold for parts to help pay off the debts that he had run up during the project. According to the Nikola Tesla Museum, quote, "In the field of mechanical engineering, Tesla discovered the original principle of the propulsion of fluids, which he applied to pumps, turbines, compressors, and fans. This finding, which he had conceived in 1890 and formulated at the beginning of 1902, was first presented to scientific experts on June 1st, 1906, and applied in practice during 1907. I just wanted to slip that in there timeline-wise before I go on about his mental health issues.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. After the failed Wardenclyffe project, Tesla became reclusive and only had a few friends, a few close friends. Among them were the writers Robert Underwood Johnson, Mark Twain, and Francis Marion Crawford. He was beginning to show signs of obsessive-compulsive disorder and was showing signs of potentially being high-functioning autistic, which honestly I think was shown in many ways throughout his early years and into adulthood, but I'm not a professional, so I can't diagnose that shit.
Yes, I can definitely see some of that for sure.
Mm-hmm. From Smithsonian, quote, "He became obsessed with cleanliness and fixated on the number 3. He began shaking hands with people and washing his hands afterwards, all done in sets of 3. He had to have 18 napkins on his table during meals and would count his steps wherever he walked. He claimed to have an abnormal sensitivity to sounds," I get that, "as well as an acute sense of sight. And he later wrote that he had, quote, a violent aversion against the earrings of women, and the sight of a pearl would almost give me a fit," end quote.
Okay.
Interesting. I'm not really sure what to make of that. From OCDUK.org, which before we started recording was the website that I told you about that's specifically about obsessive compulsive disorder, and they were talking about it in him, and I just found it so interesting to find that article. Quote, "When taking his daily swim at the public pool, he always swam 33 laps, but if he lost count, he said he couldn't leave and instead had to start over from zero. He often had an urge to circle a city block 3 times before entering a building. When leaving a building, he had to turn right only and walk around the entire block before becoming quote-unquote free and being able to leave. So it's clear that in getting older, the OCD has definitely started to affect his mind in a different way than it did when he was younger.
Absolutely. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's a lot.
It's a lot. Tesla worked every day from 9 a.m. until 6 p.m. or later, with dinner at a very specific 8:10 p.m. He would then resume his work, often until 3 a.m. For exercise, Tesla walked between 8 and 10 miles per day. He curled his toes 100 times for each foot every night, saying that it stimulated his brain cells. It was said that a lack of sleep was a constant in his life, even when he was younger, with his teachers writing warnings to his family saying, quote, he could die from overwork, end quote.
Oh no.
And I mean, with that schedule, you're getting what, 3 hours of sleep a night? Probably, yeah, not even.
Yeah. Seriously.
He also struggled with gambling addictions and poor money management throughout his life, 2 things that factored into his poverty later in life. Despite the setbacks and the breakdowns, Tesla returned to work mainly as a consultant. A lot of his ideas had started to become outlandish as time went on, and he grew increasingly eccentric, devoting much of his time to the care of wild pigeons in the parks of New York City. That's from biography.com.
You speak about that a lot more kindly than a lot of other people do.
Yeah, and you know what? I even watched like some YouTube videos where people kind of made like a little quick cartoon summary of his life, and even their tone in speaking about it was like, this is the crazy pigeon man. And yes. I'm just like, I don't want to frame it as that. Like, we are aware that he has mental health issues, but like, bro, if feeding and taking care of the pigeons is like what is gonna be outlet or a source of, what is the word I'm looking for? A source of soothing for you? Then by all fucking means, hang out with the pigeons. Like, right? Birds are fucking dope. So I did see that a lot in doing the notes for this and my research, that was kind of spoken of in a negative way. And I didn't want to do that to him. It feels disrespectful, honestly.
Oh, it absolutely is. I just, as someone who has heard a lot of the negative crazy pigeon guy talk, I felt the need to comment on it for other people who may not know. Like, people do not speak well of Tesla in his later years.
They really don't. I think a lot of people are just like, oh, the scientist went crazy. And it's like, oh my God, his mind is working at a mile a minute all the time in ways that we can't even conceive. I can't even imagine how much of an effect that had on him as a person after years of living with a brain like that. Like, who am I to fucking shit on him for that?
Yeah. People really need to reassess their definitions of crazy. Because shit like that brings the movement down.
It really does. Part of his consulting work was to work on machines for ship propulsions for John H. Hadley. He worked on these from 1908 to 1911. In 1913, he partnered with renowned New York artist and designer Louis Tiffany to work on fountains for the inside of Tiffany's jewelry stores. He applied for a patent on October 28th, and for the next several years, he worked on designs and constructed several different models of fountains.
That's really fucking cool.
Right?
Are they still there?
I don't know, but I was just thinking about how, like, the only reason I would want to go to a Tiffany store now, because I don't really wear jewelry, is to see a fountain created by Tesla. So
yeah,
I'll look into that, and maybe we can have a field trip.
I guess we're going to the city as much as I've been avoiding it.
Tesla drew the attention of the FBI at one point when he talked about building a death ray, or as I saw in some of my sources, he called it a Peace Ray, which received interest from the Soviet Union during World War I because he claimed it was, quote, capable of destroying 10,000 airplanes at a distance of 400 kilometers, which is 250 miles. And that's from Britannica.
The way that he talked about it was very not even like Peace Ray, Death Ray. Like, he was just talking about this invention and like what it was capable of. And the media is the one who was like, this weapon that can end it all and will end war, it's a Death Ray, it's a Peace Ray. Like, they really turned that and like forced the FBI to look at him.
Yes.
He didn't do that. That was their bad. Fucking media.
In the early 1900s, Tesla lived at the Waldorf Astoria, then moved to the St. Regis, leaving his bill for the Waldorf unpaid. He did this several more times until he passed at the Hotel New Yorker, always leaving his bill unpaid. Back to the pigeons. Since people want to talk about it. Despite having financial problems, he spent over $2,000 building a device to heal the bones of a sick pigeon. Unfortunately, the pigeon did not survive, and that makes me really sad. But the fact that he, like, created an invention to try to heal the bones of a sick bird, like, think about the way that that could have been used for people and other animals and things like that. Like, that's an incredible invention.
That's so wholesome and so sweet. Right? It's really giving Home Alone Lost in New York pigeon lady vibes.
Yes! That's so funny. I just recently watched that.
Solid movie.
Solid movie. He really loved feeding the pigeons from the windows of his hotel rooms as well as the parks in the city. And I love that for him. In the June 5th, 1915 edition of Scientific American, Tesla spoke for the first time about his life and his inventions, specifically his discovery of the rotating magnetic field in 1892 in Budapest. In 1916, he sold his patent for a speedometer to the Waltham Watch Company in Boston. Speedometer, dude.
Damn.
And now that's in cars.
Yeah.
According to the Nikola Tesla Museum, quote, on May 18th, 1917, the medal awarded by the American Institute of Electrical Engineers was created in 1904. It was awarded to Tesla on December 13th, 1916, for his discoveries in the field of polyphase and high-frequency currents. It was formally presented at a ceremony at the American Institute of Electrical Engineers, end quote. In 1919, he published his famous autobiography titled My Inventions in six different installments in the popular scientific magazine, The Electrical Experimenter. Love the name of that.
Yeah, seriously. It feels like a baller move publishing your autobiography in a fucking magazine like that.
Yeah.
I love that. I'm gonna do that.
In six different parts. Like, that's so cool.
Yeah, like, you're just like, you know, I know people are gonna read this. So I've got that hot Edison tea.
That hot Edison goss. In 1928, he filed his final patent. Quote, in his 72nd year, he was granted his final patent for apparatus for aerial transportation. He was the first to imagine a flying machine with vertical takeoff and landing, a combination of helicopter and fixed wing, which would be powered by his turbines. End quote.
What? Okay, okay.
This man is incredible.
My favorite invention is still the bug machine.
The bug machine. The June bug machine.
What a renewable resource to power a machine. Like, I love it.
From the Smithsonian, quote, Nikola Tesla would go on to make news from time to time while living on the 33rd floor of the New Yorker Hotel. In 1931, he made the cover of Time magazine, which featured his inventions on his 75th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
He also received greetings from more than 70 esteemed pioneers of science and technology of the day, Nobel laureates and important business magnates. Among them were Albert Einstein, Lee DeForest, and many others. the American journalist Kenneth Swayze compiled a special book with these greetings, which Tesla kept in his safe until the end of his life, end quote.
Oh, cute.
That's so nice. That's a really nice gift on somebody's 75th birthday.
Like, what a sentimental, sweet man.
Right? In 1936, on one of his walks through the city, he was hit by a car. It took several months for him to recover, and it became nearly impossible for him to keep up with the routines he had set for himself. This greatly contributed to his gradual physical weakening. I would hate to be the person that hit Nikola Tesla with their car. Do you know what you did?
Do we know who it was? Do we know anything about that person?
Not that I could find in my research, unfortunately.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting. Mm. All right. We'll come back to that in a second.
Okay. On February 16th, 1937, the Serbian Royal Academy unanimously elected Tesla as a member for his successful scientific work and his inventions.
Hell yeah.
On January 7th, 1943... at the age of 86, Nikola Tesla passed away from coronary thrombosis. And for anyone who doesn't know what that is, it's a blockage of the flow of blood to the heart caused by a blood clot in a coronary artery. And this happened in his sleep in his room at the Hotel New Yorker. Which, by the way, I almost stayed at the New Yorker Hotel, and it was supposed to be the weekend that the governor, Governor Cuomo, when he was the governor of New York, called the state of emergency for COVID. I was in the city setting up for hair show at the Javits Center, and we were supposed to stay at the Hotel New Yorker all weekend, and I was super fucking excited because so I pumped. Knew that Tesla died there, and I was like, cool, I'm gonna figure out what room it is.
Gonna go fucking see Tesla's ghost.
Go see his ghost. And then while we were setting up, they called the state of emergency and they were like, you have 90 minutes to pack up and leave. And we never got to the Hotel New Yorker. And I haven't been to the city since that day. And I'm still so mad about that. That's you, COVID.
Such a bummer.
Ruined my dream.
Right?
According to the Nikola Tesla Museum, quote, a memorial service was held on January 10th, broadcast live by Radio New York. Oh, and there's a radio because of him. New York Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia read the eulogy, which was written by Louis Adamek, the Slovenian writer, essayist, and translator. Croatian violinist Zlatko Balaković and the Slaven choir performed the Serbian patriotic song Tamo Daleko, which is far away, at the memorial. The Royal Yugoslav Government Information Center organized the ceremony of Tesla's funeral and published an announcement about the protocol for it. Tesla's remains lay in the Frank E. Campbell Funeral Home. The funeral services were held on January 12th at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. A delegation of 30 Yugoslav officers contributed to the ceremony. Nikola Tesla was interred in the Ferncliff Cemetery in Hartsdale on January 12th, 1943. 2.5 months after his death, on March 25th, 1943, at the request of Sava Kosanovic, the remains of Nikola Tesla were cremated. End quote. His cremated remains are now on display in a gold-plated sphere at the Nikola Tesla Museum, which we Hell are yeah. going there.
Abso-fucking-lutely we are.
Abso-fucking-lutely. From the New York Tesla Museum, quote, analysis and comparison of Tesla's patents has established that he was granted 116 basic patents for his inventions, 119 in the US and 7 in the UK, protecting a total of 125 inventions. The remaining 192 patents are equivalents of these basic patents. Tesla's legacy includes 9 decorations with certificates of awards with which the scientist was decorated between 1892 and 1939. And then, as we mentioned earlier, 6 months after Tesla's death, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that all of Marconi's radio patents were invalid, and they awarded the patents for radio to Tesla.
Hell yeah.
With his death, I'm sure some of you are wondering, like, what happened to all of that hotel debt? Not sure what happened to some of the others, but with his Hotel New Yorker room, at some point, his friends, including Westinghouse, helped pay for that room so that he would have a place to live. We know he left a lot of debt in other places, but I think it's like super cute that his friends would come together and help him, especially Westinghouse, especially because Westinghouse asked him to give up his royalties. So like, bro, the least you could do is pay for his place of living.
Absolutely.
Back to 2 days after his death, the FBI ordered the seizure of Tesla's belongings. And this is where I let Katie take over.
I know Ashley left us off with the FBI, but I'm actually gonna take a few steps back.
Ooh.
Tesla is living alone in his hotel room when he dies, and it's entirely up to his nephew, Sava Kasanovich, to check out Tesla's belongings and kind of organize everything for all of these museums that we've been hearing about. Before he passed away, Tesla, as Ashley talked about, has said to have created his most wild inventions, but according to Kasanovich, the hotel was a mess. And other sources at the time claimed that Tesla had a total of 60 trunks of notes, items that contained all of his ideas and his entire life's work.
Can you imagine that in a hotel room?
Insane. That is so much stuff.
It must have looked crazy in there.
Yeah. As Kasanovich looked through everything, there were a lot of things that were missing, and it was clear that someone had already been there.
Oh, shit.
The first medal that Tesla had won was missing, as well as a black notebook that were both typically located in the safe. P.E. Foxworth, the assistant director of the New York FBI office, was called in to investigate. According to Foxworth, the government was vitally interested in preserving Tesla's papers. 2 days after his death, representatives from the Office of Alien Property went into Tesla's room at the New Yorker Hotel and they seized all of his possessions. This is super fucked up because the OAP is technically a wartime agency who is only supposed to take dangerous and valuable assets from America's enemies.
Which also, like, the fact that he became a U.S. citizen.
He was a naturalized citizen for more than half of his life by this point.
Like, I just find that really fucked up and not the purpose of that department.
No. Kasanovich continued to push the fact that the OIP had no legal right to Tesla's belongings. Well, they had them in their possession. Uncle of Donald Trump, Dr. John G. Trump, an electrical engineer with the National Defense Research Committee of the Office of Scientific Research and Development, was called in to check out all of Tesla's papers while it was in the custody of OIP. They looked at it for 3 days, and Dr. Trump concluded, quote, his, Tesla's, thoughts and efforts during at least the past 15 years were primarily of a speculative, philosophical, and somewhat promotional character, often concerned with the production and wireless transmission of power. But it did not include new, sound, workable principles or methods for realizing such results. End quote. He was not concerned about any of this information falling into, like, enemy hands.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, all right, whatever, release what we have.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. court case that you talked about not only upheld the patents in his favor. Yes, but it also declared Kasanovich the rightful heir to his uncle's entire estate. So Tesla's files and other materials were sent to Serbia, where they now reside either with him or partially spread about in the Nikola Tesla museums. A lot of speculation comes in because the FBI originally recorded around 80 trunks of Tesla's items, but only 60 trunks arrived in Serbia.
Oh, shit.
Tesla biographer.
The other 20?
Mm-hmm. Tesla biographer Mark Safer says, quote, maybe they packed 80 into 60, but there's a possibility that the government did keep the missing trunks, end quote.
I would say that that's a high probability that they did.
It is.
I was going to say, knowing the government.
knowing how rapidly technology just exploded from 1952 when the government had to give it back to now. That was the biggest expansion of technology.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. government basically said that they condensed everything down to fit it into a smaller amount so that it would be easier and cheaper for them to ship. Which, fair, cheaper. I was like, oh yeah, you are stingy bastards. That's true.
But also, like, the physical crates were also his property. Like, give it back.
We don't know if it is 80 trunks as a measurement or is in trunks belonging to Tesla. Were mm-hmm. the trunks the boxes that they had to pile everything in? That is unclear.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So that's because that's what I thought at first. I was like, just send them back in what they came in. But it's not. Yeah. Some of it's like boxes, and it wasn't all just like organized into trunks. It was all over the place in the hotel room, and they had to put it into trunks. Okay. So history.com says, quote, according to the recently declassified documents, some in the FBI fear that Kasanovich was trying to wrest control of Tesla's technology in order to make such information available to the enemy, and even considered arresting him to prevent this.
The person who has the legal control over this property, you're going to arrest him because he has it.
Well, they didn't want to give it to him. They're like, what if we just arrested him before we give it to him? Because, like, what if he sells this to our enemies?
It's a lot of fucking what ifs.
Oh, welcome to the government.
Yeah.
They also go on to say,
I was
going to
say, isn't that how we ended up in Iraq? So, Jesus.
History.com. Also says, there's evidence that Franklin D. Roosevelt's vice president, Henry Wallace, discussed the effects of Tesla, particularly those dealing with the wireless transmission of electrical energy and the death ray, with his advisors, according to FBI documents released in 2016. Well, you can go into the FBI vault online and read some of the declassified Tesla papers. Most of what's on there consists of people asking the FBI to release Tesla's papers and asshole J. Edgar Hoover saying we don't have them in a variety of incredibly rude ways.
That's on par with his character.
Yeah. Right up J. Edgar Hoover's fucking book. However, for my part of today's episode, we're going to talk about the most infamous story that surrounds Tesla's death. What may have happened to those papers that created a story that is spoken about to this day. This did not happen.
Oh, full disclaimer.
And I will say at the end what I think a lot of this is based off of. Okay. And what I'm going to talk about next week.
Okay. Nice.
However, our story starts and surrounds a few main characters, the first of which being a man named Morris K. Jessup. Morris K. Jessup is, in fact, a real person. Jessup had a master's in astronomy and studied for his PhD in astrophysics. He, by day, was a car salesman and used his degree to discuss and write about space travel, UFOs, astrophysics, and Einstein's unified field theory.
Ooh.
Einstein's field theory, this is like a super, super explain it like you're a 13-year-old girl. Einstein was like, hey, guess what? I think there are four fundamental forces: gravity, electromagnetism, strong interaction, and weak interaction. Y'all only think that there are two. And Albert was like, what if we just like keep mathing these maths and we'll find this one equation that rules over all four of these forces?
Okay.
But he never discovered it. And if someone ever does, you're going to be like Doctor Strange, hardcore, can time travel, do anything, because you'll control the fundamental forces of the universe. And Einstein was like positive that you could get that math equation that's going to do that.
It makes me sad that he's dead, because I feel like he would have been the one had he had enough time.
I really agree also.
Aww.
And I think we should petition for Einstein, for more Doctor Strange characters to look like Albert Einstein. Just throwing that out there.
I'm here for it.
So Morris K. Jessup is just like doing his thing, you know, writing these books, thinking these math things. And on the 13th of January 1956, our second character, a man named Carlos Allende, contacts Morris via letter.
Okay.
And he reaches out to him and he's like, hey, I read your book and I just wanted to let you know that you don't need to keep trying to do this math shit because someone already solved it and the applications are like already being put to use. I saw it with these two eyes I've got. This is a huge fucking bold claim to be making.
I saw it with my own two eyes.
He's like, I fucking saw this. Let me tell you, in October of 1943, so 13 years ago, I was docked on a ship that was docked next to this other ship. And this other ship was the USS Eldridge, and it's a naval destroyer. And we were docked in the shipping yard of Philadelphia. He goes on to claim that the Eldridge was known for participating in experiments that were testing Einstein's theory. And that he had spent the last 13 years trying to get people to listen to him. But every time his statements had just been chalked up to an elaborate hoax. I wonder why.
Yeah.
Just wait. Allende talks about how the Eldridge was outfitted with powerful generators and high voltage cables. Okay. And that around 5 p.m., as the sun set, the Eldridge was enveloped in a dense green fog, which caused it to, quote, blink in and out of existence as if it were a light and someone was playing with its switch, end quote. Then there was a blinding flash of light around the ship and the ship vanished for a few minutes, only for it to then reappear with the bodies of the sailors fused into the ship as if they had tried to phase through the walls, a la The Flash, but stopped halfway.
Oh my lord.
I wonder why people thought this was a hoax. Allende claims that he could hear the screams of the survivors from his own ship.
Oh no.
And that anyone who did survive the experience, quote, became as mad as hatters or disappeared in weird circumstances, such as spontaneous combustion, walking into walls and never coming back, or just vanishing in the middle of a bar fight.
What?
There are people in this world who think that this is real.
How would you know about that? A bar fight? That's so specific.
So specific.
Were you there?
Right.
And to the people who believe this, ask more questions.
This is, like, such a good story. I love it.
That's a great story.
Great lore, but, like...
Story is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Morris K. Jessup is just like, all right, I'm gonna need some more evidence. And is met with, I don't have any. But the Navy would never admit that they were involved. So, like, there wouldn't be any evidence anyway. But I can find two dudes who I know that can back me up. So
I mean,
first,
he's not wrong about the Navy not admitting to things. We know that they don't.
That is a solid excuse for not having evidence on naval conspiracies. Like, how would I have evidence? Why would the Navy let that go?
Right?
Amazing.
They don't admit to shit.
Amazing. So he goes, first, I need you to call Dr. Bertrand Russell, who was a writer, chemist, and best friend of Albert Einstein. The two of them actually wrote a manifesto about the dangers of nuclear weapons that they intended to, like, release to the public. But I don't think it ever got released.
Oh.
I'll have to look into that. But I just, it was mentioned and then I did
That'd
the story
cool.
kept going. And then after you call Albert Einstein's best friend, call Dr. Franklin Reno, who was supposedly a civilian employee for the Army. During World War II, he worked for the Army facility 70 miles away from Philadelphia. But according to Allende, he was the mathematician who cracked the mega math equation, going on to head the experiment entirely.
I feel like if he was such close friends with Albert, he would have fucking told him.
Right?
Hey, bud, I cracked your equation.
We have no idea what Morris K. Jessup did with any of those claims. And
okay.
The story sort like should have just stopped there, but it doesn't. And this is why conspiracy theorists are all about this shit, because this part is real.
Okay.
Jessup gets a call from the Office of Naval Research, and they're the department in charge of, like, the Navy's top secret shit.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, this is really weird, but a copy of your book was mailed to us. And normally we wouldn't call you about that. But in the margins of each page, there's like a conversation between three different people, including three different people's handwritings. And they're all talking to each other, sort of using this book as a way to pass notes back and forth. And they're talking about really weird shit. Can you please come talk to us? And Jessup's like, okay, what?
So that actually happened.
That is real. That is real. What? The Navy got this copy of this book and was just like, the fuck?
I can absolutely see how conspiracy theorists would take that and fucking run with it.
Yeah. So there's three different handwritings in this book. One of them is identified themselves by name, Jimmy.
Okay.
And then the Naval Office named the other two handwritings Mr. A and Mr. B so they could kind of keep track of the conversation.
Mr.
They're talking about... Yeah, sorry. They're like talking about alien technology, alien species, stuff falling from the sky, magnetic fields, Tesla's death ray, and the experiment in Philadelphia. On the ships. The misters also went on to make remarks that implied that they also might be aliens themselves.
Now, that's too far over the line.
Definitely too far over the line. But I'm imagining that some of the stuff that they were talking about was probably too close to some of the things that the Navy was doing that they were like, or wait a second.
They're like, how did you know about that?
Because why else would they give a fuck about this crazy book that's mailed to them? You know what I mean? Absolutely. Otherwise, just throw it away. So conspiracy theorists kind of take that leap. Well, they're just like, well, there must have been some reason that they cared about this. But imagine getting that phone call.
That would be crazy. Like, this is the strangest day of my life.
Yeah, they really just wanted to track down who the fuck mailed them this package. But that led them nowhere. So they called the author of the book that was used, hoping that that could kind of help them. It really feels like a shot in the dark, but it actually works out because Morris agrees to come in. And after looking through the handwriting, he identifies one of the misters as Carlos Allende.
Oh,
and
shit.
And now they're like, wait a second.
Imagine knowing someone's handwriting so well.
Dude, when someone sends you letters about this, the bodies fusing with a ship, that's not something you
that's
forget.
True. That's true.
And it wasn't just handwritings. He said that there were like misspellings and like the way that the vernacular, almost the way things were misspelled and written and stuff, like, oh, that's that guy for sure.
Yeah.
So they're basically like, I'm sorry, we're going to need you to explain how you know this person. So he gives them the...
Well, he contacted me.
Well, he
with this crazy fucking story.
About this ship. the USS Eldridge.
Fog.
Which was actually a naval ship that was outfitted with generators for something else. And we'll kind of get into that a little bit. But, like,
yeah.
So the Navy's like, what the fuck is happening? This is so weird.
Listen, so, every conspiracy theory has a little bit of the truth to it.
They find weird things of truth and they string it all together in a crazy way. So Jessup goes home and he's kind of done with this story for the time being. But we do know that the ONR, Office of Naval Research, does speak with him three more times.
Okay.
They're trying to track down Carlos and they hire a company called Varo Manufacturing. I don't know personally how a manufacturing company would help them find him, but they did have like a contract with the Navy for like secret government shit, which could mean really anything, but they're involved. They're given a copy of this book with the handwritten notes in it, and they make their own copy complete with typed notations. They make a bunch of copies, and that gets sent around the Office of Naval Research. And this shit goes basically top secret viral amongst the Navy.
I knew you were gonna say viral.
Like, because it has things about the Philadelphia experiment, about people being fused to ships, aliens. Like, people are like, this is the craziest shit ever. The ONR also gave Jessup 3 copies of what is known as the Varro edition. Later that winter, Jessup goes to meet with some buddies in New York, where he shares the Varro edition and allegedly asks them to, quote, keep their knowledge hidden in case anything should happen to him, end quote. During this time, he's trying to write more books, and that's not really going well. He loses his publisher. No. He's blowing off his friends because he's too busy and canceling doctor's appointments because he tells them he's on to something big.
Ooh, shit.
A few months later, Jessup is found in a parking lot, having taken a tube from the exhaust to funnel it into his window and take his own life. His acquaintances didn't seem surprised, but those closest to him said that he was not the type to do this, and if he did, he would have left a note.
Dude.
Also, like,
I don't even know this person, and that feels not correct.
Like, doing that outside, isn't that something you, like, do in a garage?
I would think so.
It was, like, sealed on, very
random parking lot. Like, how did he drive the car to the parking lot with it? Did he drive with all of that on there? Kill himself slowly on the way? Like, have the windows rolled down so you get to this random parking lot? Yeah. Or did he set it up there? And how did somebody not notice that happening?
The detective in charge of the scene said multiple times that there is something super suspicious about it, that it seems way too well done, and described it as professionally done. When he and others tried to dig in and ask for an autopsy report, they are met back with none was ever done.
What?
So now we add that into this conspiracy theory. That is real. Morris K. Jessup is a real person, and that all of that actually did happen. Whether or not it is tied to him knowing about a conspiracy theory where they were using Nikola Tesla's technology to... We'll get to it. But yes, that part is real and crazy and sad. But
Jesus.
Yeah. Things get pretty quiet for a little bit. But the story of the Philadelphia experiment is going around through sailors, naval officers, and a mythology is really starting to surround this thing that has gotten out at this point.
It's like the ultimate game of telephone.
Yeah. And in 1979, it has reached the point of lore that two authors, William Moore and Charles Berlitz, try to track down Carlos Allende.
Okay.
Because they have heard about this and they want to interview him for a book. They couldn't find him on their own, but then they somehow got the letters that were sent to Morris K. Jessup from Carlos Allende, which included a sailor's ID code.
Oh.
So one of the authors, William Moore, tracked the code to a man named Carl M. Allen, who was on a ship October 28th, 1943, docked in the Bay of Philadelphia.
Oh, shit.
It's super important to note, however, that the USS Eldridge records do not have it anywhere near Philadelphia that night, but rather docked in Brooklyn.
Oh, interesting.
That being said, Carlos Allende and Carl Allen are definitely
the same person. Absolutely. He didn't even get that creative with it. No. There was no effort there.
No. An effort was not made. After they interviewed him, they published a book about everything he said, Jessup's death, and after the book was published, it actually got turned into a movie in the 1980s.
Oh.
The movie tells the story of two sailors participating in an experiment to make a ship invisible to radars. Legend has it that the production company themselves got a warning from the U.S. government saying to stop the movie. The movie was released and it did okay, but allegedly they got another letter saying if you don't pull the movie, we will.
Oh, shit.
The tale goes on to say that the production company asked for a court order and the U.S. government supplied one, and the movie was banned for 2 years only to be later released on VHS.
What fucking movie is this?
The Philadelphia Experiment is what it's called. Other sources say that there are no evidence that it was banned or that any letters were ever sent, but that the story behind that was used to push stories and try to get more ticket sales. What the movie did was bring forward, quote, the only living witness of the USS Eldridge, or rather, a man who claimed to be.
Hmm.
Okay. In 1990, Al Bailuck claimed to be the last survivor of the Philadelphia experiment. He takes to the World Wide Web of 1990 to tell everyone that all of this actually started back in 1931. Ooh. The goal of this was in hopes to make people disappear and sneak into spaces.
Okay.
Bailuck claims that the beginning of the experiments were run by none other than our boy Nikola Tesla. Who had cracked the math's great mathing and was now Doctor Strange Tesla edition.
Then Doctor Strange, Tesla's version.
Yeah. Exactly.
Listen, I had to fit a Taylor reference in.
Then, once World War II started, the goal went from making people invisible to making battleships invisible.
Okay.
Helping both the fight as well as getting people safely from area coming home from war. Like, so if they're injured, they can kind of like sail home invisibly and not get bombed. Apparently the first test happened in 1936, and it wasn't exactly what they wanted it to be. The second test was supposed to be in a Brooklyn Naval Yard in 1940 on an unmanned ship that they added coils and generators to. They tried again and succeeded and was deemed Project Rainbow.
Okay.
In 1942, the government wanted to try it with human test subjects, but Tesla didn't think it was ready. So he tried to detune the generators and more of the project's equipment. But once the government caught word, they fired and replaced him with a physicist from the Manhattan Project.
Oh, shit.
Again, these are all Bailuck's claims.
Yeah,
yeah. He's like, this is what really went down. He goes on to say that suspiciously, Tesla was found dead 10 months later of heart issues that comes most likely from eating meat and lack of exercise. However, Tesla held a very strict vegetarian diet and exercised so regularly that many think he was actually murdered by the government for his betrayal.
8 to 10 miles a day.
8 to 10 miles
a day. This man had a cardio system that was working in overdrive. And he got hit by a car and it slowly weakened him. But like, that he's still, not, like, that's not in that quick of a time are you going to develop a fucking heart condition?
Well, and that's why I asked, I was like, so did they find who hit him with the car? Or was it a mysterious hit and run attempt on his life by the government?
I was going to say, your question on that makes so much more sense now.
Yeah. I just didn't want to bring anything up because, they were like, you know, it's a buildup.
Let's take care of this loose end right here.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we'll just hit this old man with our car. No problem. But actually, he's like crazy fit and healthy. So big problem.
Big fucking problem. Oh my God.
So Bailuck goes on to be like, the Manhattan Project scientist was also really suspicious as to whether or not this is ready for humans. So the best way to go about Project Rainbow was to ask for volunteers. Be like, this could be dangerous. Do you want to do this? The first manned experiments apparently began in July. They were on the first test when they became invisible to the radar and spectators of the ship. But the men on board got really sick, but not sick enough to stop the trials. So they kept going. Bailuck claims that at 9 a.m. on August 12th, the USS Eldridge was docked. The mist came. The vessel lost radio contact. He was with his brother, who was also there at the time. He was like, we don't feel so good. So we tried to run up to the machinery and flip the switch so the experiment would stop. But the switches wouldn't move. Ooh. So in order to try and like get the fuck out of it and save their lives, they said they jumped off of the ship. And then Bailuck claims that he woke up in the year 2137.
What?
But then the ship reappeared and he's back on the ship. Or no, the ship reappeared and two men are fused to the ship. Bailuck is just kind of like wandering through time and then he dies and is reborn into someone else. He kind of just goes off the rails a little bit, which I don't super go into the rest of his story because it's very, very weird.
But I mean, if we're to believe him, I can only imagine how much that would fuck you up, so...
Yes. Well, and then, like, he said his brother doesn't make it back to the past, where he's like, so he doesn't have a brother. And then he forgot about all of this until he watched the Philadelphia experiment, where then it was brought back to him because he was brainwashed by the army to forget all of these things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brainwashed by the army, but it was a Navy boat.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Everyone's like, why did it take you so long to come forward? And he was like, I was brainwashed to forget it. Now, okay. After going around all of the paranormal and UFO circuits, he then said he made all of that up. Which is another reason I don't like go too far into like the rest of the stuff.
Yeah.
But none of that has anything to do with Carlos Allende Allen, who made similar claims with no proof or evidence.
We just out here talking shit.
He just said some things. Regardless, this story is truly one of my favorites,
mm-hmm.
because it links to what happened to Tesla's notes and why they were taken. Their idea fundamentally relies on them taking Tesla's notes for a few years, gathering all of the information that they could, and then releasing some of it back and expanding on technology rapidly from there.
Yes.
Which feels a lot more plausible once you drop the time travel fusing of people into boats becoming invisible.
Yeah. Once you get past that part, you're like, okay, the rest of this is definitely believable with all of the other actions that we've seen out of the government forever.
Absolutely. Regardless, next week I'll be retelling my absolute favorite conspiracy, whom the mind behind has never once wavered on, but has said multiple times that it did also include our boy, Nikola Tesla.
I'm excited.
And those are my notes.
Are you going to tell them what it is?
Oh, no, you have to wait and see.
Oh, okay.
You know, but they will.
Special surprise for next week. God, I really hope everyone enjoyed this. At this point in our recording, we are 2 hours and 11 minutes in. It's going to be much shorter because we took some bathroom breaks that you guys won't hear.
No.
But this is going to be a jam-packed episode, a long one, and we hope you've enjoyed the ride. And before we sign off, we do just want to say thank you again to all of you for literally making the last year and even just the last like 6 months of our lives so absolutely incredible, and just for providing us with a level of growth that we didn't think was possible.
Definitely.
We are so happy that you're here.
Thank you all so much for listening.
And until next week, bye.
Bye. For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.